Hare Krishna. Seek the permission and blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. Maharaj, seeking your permission. I'll speak something from the Srimad Bhagavatam for the purification of my own heart and for the pleasure of all of you. As we are preparing for Ram Navami, I chose this verse to discuss from 9:11:16, where Lord Ram's separation is being described from Mother Sita. Actually, I was very inspired last 2 days. Day before yesterday, Leela Shakti Mataji was speaking about how she grew up as a child, hearing Ramayana from her father, and the community spirit of a Vedic culture she was describing. It was very, very heartwarming to see how Ramayana is such an integral part of the Vedic culture. And then she also, one thing which I really liked in that class was she spoke about how Ram, when we chant Ram, in the name of Ram, there is Radha Rani and Krishna. Ra is for Radhika and Ma is Madhusudana. She was quoting Jiva Goswami's. So I felt very happy because when Ram Navami is coming, you know, sometimes I feel a little guilty because I like Ramayana that time more than Bhagavatam. And then when Janmashtami comes, then again we are into Bhagavatam. And then when Gaur Purnima is coming, then Gaur Leela is, we forget other things. So actually what triggered was yesterday's class. I think Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu, he gave class. And he spoke about this theme of dharma, dharma sankat, and Lord Ram feeling separation from Mother Sita. So I thought it's a good topic to take. So we see Lord Ram is crying and lamenting a lot. Not only in this verse, you will see in Aranyakand, one of the most poignant sections of the Ramayana is Aranyakand, when Lord Ram and Sita Lakshman are in the forest. And chapters 58 to 78, they are like very intense. There you will see Lord Ram is come as a human being, right? And he's a perfect human being. And you will see here, he is confirming how he's a perfect human being because he's also perfectly vulnerable. And perfectly, you know, he goes mad in separation from Mother Sita and he takes shelter of Lakshman. So I thought I'll share some of the verses I made notes on from this section. A beautiful section. A few years ago I was reading this. So when we read this, you know, if we are not aware of how, as Prabhupada writes in this purport, this is not material, this is spiritual. We need to first understand this is transcendental. Lord crying is not like, you know, is actually almost in depression. But Lord never gets into depression. That we should know. So Lord performed this pastime for us to teach us how we should also hanker and we should be yearning to have that feelings of separation from the Lord and come closer to the Lord. So Srimad Bhagavatam, one devotee is explaining, teaches us how to leave the world essentially. Mahabharata teaches us how to live in this world. And Ramayana teaches us how to lead and what a leader's qualities are. And here, one of the amazing qualities of Lord Ram as a leader is being authentic and vulnerable and willing to express his, allow his emotions to come out and being honest and being very, very congruent. So, we'll see how Lord Ram responds to Mother Sita's separation. But when I was reading this, I was stunned to see that the verses reveal Lord Ram is displaying the same symptoms as a person who goes through depression reveals. Like I was, many years ago I read this, that the few things that happen when we get into depression. When we go through some suffering, we first go into denial. We deny that we are suffering. And we try to put up a positive front. That is called toxic positivity. It's not positive thinking. It's just that we are trying to deny. Denial is the worst kind of lie. Because that is a lie we tell ourselves. So then denial, and then when we realize that denial is not working because that pain is real and I'm not able to suppress it, so then denial transforms into bargain. We start trying to get some way out of this. So we try to do cut corners, something we try to do, get some solution. Bargaining also doesn't help. Then anger comes out. We get frustrated, we throw tantrums. And even that doesn't help. Then we get into depression. Unless after these three stages, there is very good association. And in that association, we come to the stage of acceptance. And it is when there is acceptance that healing begins. Without acceptance, we can't heal. We can't simply heal ourselves by denying our suffering and misery. And you will see, Lord Ram, again I'll repeat, he is not human in the sense he is Supreme Lord, but he's teaching us how we also may do the same thing. We may deny our attachments, our suffering, our pain. Denial leads to, the next is, after denial, bargain, then anger, and then if you have good association, then acceptance. Otherwise, depression. Like, you know, if somebody is, for example, suffering from cancer. So first we say, no, I'll be all right. This will get all right. You know, like that, we keep doing positive thinking. But then sometimes it's obvious that it is very last stage or it is very serious. And then what we do, we start, instead of taking complete shelter of Krishna, we may think, no, let me bargain. Means let me go to different demigods or different tantric pujas and different. We somehow try to salvage the situation. That is called bargaining. And then even that fails, instead of accepting, we may start getting angry, frustrated. And then finally, when that is not solving the problem. Or a chain smoker, for example. Somebody is into chain smoking. He just can't give up smoking. And he says, he's in denial. Like, I had a college friend. He used to smoke 35 cigarettes a day. And one day I told him, why don't you give it up? He said, I can give it up anytime. It's easy. It's easy for me. Then if I give it up now, he said, oh, I just don't feel like. But when I want to, I can give up. That is classic example of denial. And then bargain is when you're going through rehabilitation and you say, let me smoke 5 cigarettes or 1 cigarette, just one. I just want one. You know, that desperation for getting some relief, that is bargain. And then even that doesn't work out, then you get frustrated. So like that. And then depression happens. If there is no proper acceptance that I'm addicted, accepting that I'm going through this suffering. And then we can offer our pain to Krishna for healing. Acceptance is extremely important. So Lord Ram is teaching us how to practice acceptance. So I'm entering the 58th chapter now. All of you know the background. Sita has been abducted by Ravana. That's another amazing pastime in itself. And Lord Ram is there with whom? When Sita is abducted, where is Lord Ram? He is chasing the deer. And Maricha has assumed his real form and he shouts, Ram! Alas, Lakshman! And Mother Sita starts. You know, that's a whole pastime where Mother Sita first initially urges Lakshman to go and find Lord Ram, and then finally when Lakshman says, this is not my Lord and Master Ram's voice, Sita says, can't you hear him? He's crying for help. And Lakshman says a sentence which later completely proves wrong. He tells Mother Sita, no, Mother Sita, my Lord Ram never cries. Little does he know that very soon, a few chapters later, we are going to witness one of the most intense crying ever exhibited in any incarnation by any Lord. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of a devotee is crying in separation from Lord. I don't think we have seen Lord crying intensely in separation from a devotee. You know, from his consort, of course, not a devotee. But yeah, so you'll see Lord Ram's crying. So that time Sita gets angry with Lakshman and she, you know, cast aspersions on his character, and then a lot of pastimes happens. And now Lakshman is very sad and he's on his way to meet Lord Ram. And Lord Ram, meanwhile, hearing Maricha's scream, realizes that this is the strategy of the Rakshasas. And then he comes running towards the hermitage because he knows Sita's life might be in danger. And as he's coming running, he sees jackals on his left side, which is a sign of inauspiciousness. And then he sees Lakshman and he holds Lakshman and says, Lakshman, what are you doing here? And then Lakshman reveals what happened. And Lord Ram gets angry with Lakshman. Who got angry with Lakshman earlier? Mother Sita scolded him. And now Lord Ram is also scolding Lakshman. And Lakshman is not saying, what is this? You know, you both husband and wife are chastising me. I will leave both of you and go and join some other institution. No, he is accepting. Okay. He's serving. He's attached to Lord Ram's service and Mother Sita. But that's very interesting. In the Valmiki Ramayana, I was reading all these verses last 2 years ago when I was studying Ramayana. It is amazing is that Lord Ram is very upset, angry with Lakshman, but he speaks gently. And the verse says, he's very sensitive. He says, "Oh son of Sumantra." Actually, Lord Ram's sensitivity is another amazing subject. You know, we can, you know, when he's going towards the forest, Sumantra is driving the chariot. And Lord Ram is on the chariot, and he sees all the Brahmanas, all the elderly people are walking with him. So he feels sad, and he also starts walking with them. And then the devotees insist that he should be on the chariot. And when he's on the chariot, he's not very comfortable. And Dasharath Maharaj, Kaushalya, Sumitra are behind, and Dasharath Maharaj is shouting, "Ram, wait, wait, don't go." And Lord Ram sees, and he's feeling that pain. And he tells Sumantra, "Drive fast." And Sumantra is the minister, and he's hearing his king tell him, "Go slow." And Lord Ram is saying, "Go fast." So he's confused. And Lord Ram says, "No, go fast." And then he says, "But my king is ordering to go slow." And Lord Ram, Param Satyavan, always speaks the truth. He tells Sumantra, "When you come back, tell the king that you did not hear him." And he orders him, "Go fast." So like that, it's very, very, Ramayana has a lot of nectar. Anyway, so now they come to the hermitage. And Lord Ram is looking, starts running everywhere. He says, "Sita, Sita." He starts looking for Sita everywhere. And he realizes at one point, because the whole hermitage is, you know, the things are all scattered. The flowers are fallen. And it's like, it's obvious that Sita is not here. But Lord Ram is desperately looking for signs that Sita is here. So in that desperation, he starts first of all shouting, "Sita, Sita." And then when he realizes, he starts crying, but then he checks his tears. Now he enters the denial phase. He says, "No, no, no, Sita is here only. She is here. She is teasing me." And then he starts very melodiously chanting Sita's name. "Sita, Sita." He starts chanting her name. And then he starts wailing. Suddenly he realizes. And then again he comes back. Positive thinking. "No, no, no, she is here. She is here." So then what he does? Then Lord Ram sits in a meditative pose. And Lakshman have already realized that Mother Sita has been kidnapped. It's obvious. But he's not able to stop, because Lord Ram is an emotional, you know, it's like he's very emotional, intensely emotional at this moment. So Lord Ram tells Lakshman, "Lakshman, Sita is nearby. She's teasing me. Because few days ago, when I was doing meditation, she came to me. And with an amorous pastime, she was just coming to tease Lord Ram, and Lord Ram pretended, Lord Ram was a little upset, if I don't disturb me now. So he's saying, now she's taking revenge. He's telling all this to Lakshman. And then Lord Ram puts in a meditative pose. And then he starts looking from the corner of his eye. Sita is somewhere. And he's looking, and she finds Sita is not here. And Lakshman is watching all of this. And then he says, and then Ram starts smiling. The verses describe Ram is smiling and saying, "Sita, I'm sorry, please come back." And he's speaking very sweetly. And then even then, Mother Sita is nowhere. It's increasingly getting obvious. And then he opens his eyes. Now, he should have at this point of time realized this. Lakshman have already realized. But what Lord Ram does? Again, denial. "No, Lakshman, Sita has gone to Godavari to fetch water." Now, interestingly, Sita never went alone to Godavari to fetch water. But Lord Ram is in denial, so he is unable to see this. "Let us wait. She will come back. Lakshman, why don't you go to Godavari and call her fast? I'm missing her. I'm feeling separation from her." Now, Lakshman knows he will not find Mother Sita there, but still he pretends to go. He walks and he comes back. And then when he comes back, his head low, Lord Ram realizes Sita. So basically, denial is over now. You can't continue with denial. Then Lord Ram starts bargaining. A whole chapter of bargaining. He starts telling, "Oh, Ashoka tree, oh, Kadamba tree, oh," and he starts mentioning all the names of all the trees. "Please tell me where is my Sita. Please bring her back." He starts begging all the trees, all the forest deities. And then he says, "Lakshman, will Kaikeyi be very happy now?" "No, no. She won't be happy. I think she will be happy if I die." "No, but will Kaushalya be okay? Because I will die now. And if I die, then Bharat will be king. But if Bharat will be king, Kaikeyi may not treat my mother Kaushalya nicely. So he starts thinking all of this. So I hope Mother Kaushalya, but Mother KK won't treat my Mother Kaushalya badly. I know her. I just hope she is happy. So he starts thinking of others' happiness now. He's himself in distress, and then he starts talking to imaginary Sita. He imagines Sita is in front of him and he starts talking to her. Where are you? Where have you gone? Why don't you come back? You are here. And then he looks at the other direction and he feels Sita is there. Because he sees a yellow flower, he remembers Sita's cloth, which she was wearing. Or he sees some flowers, he sees anything, he sees the bark of a tree, he remembers Sita's different features when he sees things around him. So like that. And then he looks at a deer and then he says, oh deer, please tell me where is my wife. All the animals, birds, trees, he's asking all of them. And then he tells Lakshman, see, this deer is running alone. I think he also has lost his wife like I have lost my wife. But then, it's interesting, as Ram is crying also, but he's putting up a brave front. And Lakshman had just told Mother Sita that Ram will never cry. And now he's seeing one of the most piteous wailing of Lord Ram. So, when I was reading this, you know, we say Ram is the source of all happiness. Ravan literally means one who makes you cry. Ram means happiness. So if you read Ram about Ram, we'll be happy. And if you read about Ram's crying, then our crying will go away. Because this is very spiritual, transcendental, blissful. I've seen many devotees have shared this. Even Radhesham Prabhu was once told me, the temple president of Pune, that one of the biggest needs of devotees is how to fill the emotional vacuum in the heart. You know, we may practice, we may have a lot of practices, rituals, we may do a lot of seva, but somewhere we may feel emotionally not connected to the Lord. So he was saying that Gaur Leela, especially Chaitanya Bhagavat, and also the Ante Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I also found it very, very logical and very convincing. Ramayan and Gaur Leela. You will find they somewhere fill that emotional vacuum. Of course, for advanced devotees, even Ras Leela, the Bhagavatam, Gopi, separation, all of that is there. But we see a very human kind of experience here in Ramayana. So like that. So we need to somehow fill our heart with emotions for the Lord. And Lord Ram's crying is a very good example. To just read that and being present, it will invoke prayers in our heart. Because our problem is, you know, I say in India, in Hindi, I'll translate it into English. I say that Ravan sabke man mein hai. Actually, we are carrying Ravan in our heart. In the sense, the desire to enjoy is very strong. We need to invoke that connection with Lord Ram's pastimes and feel the emotions that Lord Ram is feeling and, you know, get into that space. Ravan sabke man mein hai, Ram abhi tak van mein hai. Ravan is in everybody's heart and Ram is still in the forest. He has not come to my heart. Therefore, we want to pray to the Lord that, you know, I want to cry in separation from you. I want to come closer to you. Jai Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Radha Gokulanand Bhagwan ki jai. There is one very beautiful poem, I don't remember that. It's a devotee of Lord Ram. He writes a very nice line. He says, every devotee has his favorite aspect of the Lord. He says, Krishna's devotees, there are Krishna's devotees who love Krishna in Vrindavan. There are some devotees who love Krishna in Mathura. Some say, I love Krishna of Dwarka. Similarly, there are Lord Ram's devotees who say, I love Lord Ram of Chitrakoot. If you go to Ramanandi Sampradaya, they love Ram in Chitrakoot. There are people who say, I love Lord Ram of Ayodhya. Some who love Lord Ram of Kishkinda. There is this poet who says, my favorite is Ram of Lanka. Why? Very interesting. He says, because my dear Lord Ram, all other places, Chitrakoot, Ayodhya, wherever you went, you were welcomed and you were invited. You were wanted there. Lanka was one place where you went uninvited. And my heart is also filled with so much of anartha, it is like Lanka. You are uninvited in my heart. You are not wanted. So just like you force yourself and you entered Lanka without invitation, similarly, I beg you, please enter, invade the fortress of my heart and enter like that. So, very beautiful section where Lord Ram is crying in separation from mother Sita. And it's interesting, you know, a few chapters before when they were in Dandak, of course, they're in Dandakaranya. In the few chapters before Sita's abduction, one day when Sita and Ram were sitting comfortably, Mother Sita asks a very interesting question to Lord Ram. We find that conversation where she says, "My dear Lord, what gives you greatest distress? When do you cry the most? And what gives you greatest happiness?" And when she was asking this, Mother Sita was thinking that my Lord will tell me that, "My dear Sita, separation from you gives me the greatest distress. And when I am reunited with you, that gives me greatest happiness." She was expecting this answer. But the answer Lord Ram gave made her even more, it was a different answer, but that made her even more happier. You know what was the answer he gave? He said, "When a devotee intensely cries in separation from me, and he desperately wants to be reunited with me, and he is crying in great pain, and he is suffering in the material world, and when I see his suffering and his crying, that gives me great pain. And when I work to remove that distress, that gives me greatest happiness." So like that. So in the great lamentation, when I was reading this section, I remember feeling at one point of time, Lord Ram is crying so much, but when he lost the kingdom, like he was told, Mother Kaikeyi told him, "Now you have to leave the forest." And how does Ramayana describe Ram's reaction? Equipoised. Not at all affected. I was thinking, how come Ram was totally equipoised then and now he's crying like this? As if anticipating this question will come in our mind, Lord Ram reveals the reason to Lakshman. In the next few verses, he says, Lakshman, you must be wondering why I'm crying like this so much. And when I was banished to the forest by Mother Kaikeyi, I felt no remorse. I felt no sadness. Because in Ayodhya, till this point of time in my life, I've always equipoised because Sita was with me. Now I've lost her, so I've lost all equanimity. So like that. So I'm just going a little fast forward. You know, sometimes devotees, what we do, you know, in our attempt to fix everything through intellect, scriptures, we want to study scriptures intellectually, which is needed. We need to analyze scriptures also. But sometimes we have to keep intellectual analysis aside and enter the emotions of the scriptures. That's very important. Because there are some people who say, Mantra, Shurpanka, they're not really villains. You know, they were sent by the demigods. And they quote verses also from Tulsi Ramayana and all that. And I say, yes, it's all correct. But we should, as devotees, see them as villains. They are arrangement of the Lord, and they are Lord's associates. They are glorious. But no, we should be in the mood that how could Mantra do this? You know, how could Kaikeyi do this? Or could Shurpanka do this? We can't call them as associates of the Lord. Then we are not entering the spirit of the scripture. Like, you know, the broom. You know, we use a broom to clean the altar floor, but we don't keep the broom in front of the Lord in the altar. The broom as a place, right? Similarly, Mantara may be part of the Lord's internal potency and all that, but she has to be shown her place. She is the villain. And there are some people, you know, very cheap. I mean, I want to share it here because you may come across such intellectually stimulating versions of Ramayana, but they are all bogus. Stay away from them. There is one Ramayana, you know, where Ravana is instructing Lakshman just before dying, and Lakshman is humbly hearing and taking notes from Ravan. They are trying to prevent how Ravana was very intelligent and very good. All that may be true, but we should not have that mood. You know? Of course, it's not true. It's not there in Ramayana anywhere. But, you know, there are these people who want to discredit Ramayana and create confusion in our minds. They write like that. There's also another place where, another version, where they write how Ravan, Ram and Sita, all three of them, Ravan, Ram and Sita, all three of them performed Shiva Puja together. You know, what all of this does is it actually destroys the emotional connect with Ramayana and with the Lord. So, therefore, the Vedic scriptures say that if we don't know how to take milk properly from the cow's udders, we'll get blood instead of milk. So if you don't know how to approach scriptures properly, we will create havoc. What is the Rupa Goswami's verse? Shruti Smuti Puranadi Pancharatrikam Vidimina Ayakantike Harir Bhaktir Utpata Eva Kalpate. If you don't follow the proper parampara, traditions, bona fide scriptures, then utpat means it will create chaos in the society. That's where I found one verse very interesting. When Jatayu is castigating Ravan for abducting Mother Sita, one of the arguments he gives, you know, like he says many analogies. Oh, Ravan, you sinful wretch, you are taking Sita is like a child trying to pull the teeth of a poisonous serpent. Second, he says, you are trying to take Sita is like a lame man trying to jump over a mountain or something like that. He gives many analogies. And one of the analogies Jatayu gives is, you are taking Sita is like trying to change the conclusion of scriptures through logic. That means using logical analysis of scriptures is not always healthy. So anyway, but Ram's crying is not a weakness, as Prabhupada writes in today's purport also. It is transcendental. And it's coming from a space of love, pure love. And in his dharma, manav dharma, as a Maryada Purushottam, it is coming from a space of responsibility. And, you know, he loves his wife and there is sensitivity also in his dealings. So, and if we allow these emotions to enter our heart, then we can move from the I space to God space. We can enter Krishna space. And that's why if you see in India, from childhood, children, you know, we are taught how to represent Ramayana through our different arts, music, dance, drama. Ramayana is always presented like that. So let's come back to the pastime. I'll just briefly rush through this pastime. It's very sweet. Where Lord Ram is expressed what? First he has shown what sign? Denial. Then bargain. So in the bargain, he starts talking to the tigers, elephants. Please tell me where is Sita. Finally, Lord Ram again tells Lakshman, go to Godavari, she's certainly there. Now, it's very interesting. Valmiki Muni explains in great detail Godavari's mistake. River Godavari is a person. You know that? Like Yamuna Devi is a person. Now, this is an interesting section in the Ramayana where, see, Godavari could have, you know, Yamuna Devi, Ganga Devi as a personified form. So, Godavari could also have taken a personal form. And she could have told Ram that Ravana has kidnapped Sita. But Godavari did not appear in front of Ram. Because Valmiki says that Godavari Maya, she was terrified at Ravana's appearance some time ago. With the way Ravana was screaming at Sita. Oh, proud lady, look at my arms. I can destroy, I can kill death. I can drink the ocean, I can burn fire.
Oh, really?
Thank you for this. Where was I? So Ravana is like screaming and he's telling, I got a message, you can go on for some more time. So I don't have to rush. So Ravana is like boasting about his prowess and Sita is trembling. So Godavari saw this. River Godavari saw this. So she's still remembering that form of Ravan, that fearful form. So when Lord Ram is asking Godavari Maya, oh Godavari, have you seen my wife Sita? Godavari could have come in her personified form and she could have told him that Ravana has taken. But she did not come because she was afraid of Ravana. Valmiki Muni explains this in the Ramayana. Can you see something similar happen in Krishna Lila? Where somebody could have served Krishna but did not because of fear of Akrura? No. Wait, no, not the washerman. Somebody who wanted to serve Krishna. Washerman also, yes. No, I'm talking about somebody who is a devotee. Devotee, but could not serve Krishna. Bhishma also. I'm talking about the 10th canto, Bhagavatam. Which chapter? Okay, I'll tell you. Okay, I'll give a hint. There is somebody who was fearful of Kamsa, but understood that Krishna is God, and wanted to serve Krishna, but because of fear of Kamsa, did not go to serve Krishna. Not Kubja. The Brahmanas. You know, the wives of Brahmanas who ran to Krishna with all the offerings. And when they came back, the brahmanas start chastising themselves, oh, our wives are glorious, you know, then they start glorifying their wives in choice poetry and saying that you are so glorious, we are so foolish, we should have surrendered to Krishna, and all those prayers are there. And then the next verse is, but still they didn't go to because they were afraid of Kamsa. So something similar here. Godavari knew that Lord Ram is Supreme Lord, but she was afraid. Now the best part of this pastime is, Godavari is a deity, she is a river, and she did not serve Krishna. The next verse describes, Lord Ram looks at the deer. There are 4 or 5 deers running, and they stop, and Lord Ram looks at them. They all look at Lord Ram. They don't know the language. All of them, you know, take their neck, and they point towards the southern direction. So then Lord Ram tells Lakshman, see Lakshman, all of them are pointing to south. That means my Sita has been taken to the southern direction. So the deer, they had limitations. They didn't have the wherewithal, the resources to help Lord Ram. They were not like river Godavari. But still there is no ahetuki apratiyata ayatma suprafiti save pumsam. There is no limitation for serving Krishna. With all their limitations, they were able to render service to Lord Ram. And they are the ones who should be most scared, because Maricha had come in a golden deer form, and he started going around, he started going with this deer. You know, but this deer realized that this is a different kind of deer, because he started suddenly developing, Maricha, the Ramayana described, he started developing a desire to eat this deer because he's a Rakshasa. And animals are very perceptive. So they knew it's a deer, but they knew it's a carnivorous deer. So the deer were scared of Maricha. Then they saw Ravana also. So they had every reason to run away. And they saw, and you know, deer, I don't know how many of you experienced, they're very, very cowardly animals. Like if you go near them, I have gone to this forest, Borivali National Park in Mumbai. Whenever I go there, when I see the deer, I want to go close to them, they run away. So they're very afraid of humans. So the deer had, these 4 or 5 deer, they had a reason to run away from that site. But they thought, let us serve Lord Ram. So, but it's interesting. Godavari could not serve, but the deer served. And who learned from this mistake of Godavari Maya? Which river learned from this mistake of Godavari Maya? Yamuna Devi. Next incarnation, when Lord came as Krishna, and Vasudev had to carry Krishna from Mathura to Vrindavan, what did Yamuna Devi do? She cleared. Yeah, she touched the feet and she made way for Vasudev to take Krishna. So like that. And we know Lord Ram was helped by Jatayu. Jatayu told Lord Ram where, you know, Sita was taken. But Lord Ram could meet Jatayu in the first place because the deer helped them. So then Lord Ram runs towards the southern direction. Lakshman is running behind. And there he sees this chariot, broken chariot. And then Lord Ram, still in denial, bargaining going on. Then he starts crying. He says, oh, this is clear that 2 Rakshasas have fought for my Sita, and one of them was killed and the other ate my Sita. He comes to this conclusion. See, his observation is right. What he's observing is right, but his conclusion becomes wrong because he's emotionally affected. See, he's not able to conclude properly. And Ram is crying. Here we should remember, we should not see Ram's crying from Tattva point of view. You can't ask logical questions on why Ram did this or why Ram said this. We should see their Rasa, not Tattva. This is Rasa here, you know. Like there is, many times what happens, people, they take out meanings from the rasa aspect and they give tattva from there. Like there is, Isolinus Srila Jayadeva Swami Maharaj was once telling us that there was one big scholar of some academic, religious scholar. He calls Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a Chaitanya saint who suffered from epilepsy. And the proof he gives is, Lord Chaitanya, when that Pathan was catching Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya, you know, he was chanting and dancing in ecstasy, and that Pathan was impressed. So Lord Chaitanya don't want to show that he's God and he's getting all these ecstatic symptoms. So to downplay his emotional state, Lord Chaitanya told that Pathan, actually I get epilepsy sometimes, so that the Pathan doesn't take him seriously and leaves him alone. So then this scholar, what he does, he zooms into that verse and says, hey, this verse proves that Chaitanya had epilepsy, you know, like that. So that's how we have to have scriptural, we have to read scriptures from parampara only. Anyway, so Lord Ram is laughing, crying, is in denial, is in bargain. So I was thinking, why is Lakshman quiet all this while? Lakshman could have held Lord Ram and done something, right? So Valmiki Muni describes that Lakshman wanted to help Lord Ram and he tried counseling Lord Ram. He said, oh, my dear brother, Mother Sita is safe. And then Ram stopped. He heard Lakshman for a few minutes. And then as if completely ignoring what Lakshman said, Lord Ram loudly screamed in pain. So all that Lakshman had said has gone down the drain. It didn't have any effect on Lord Ram. Seeing all of this, Lakshman became disheartened. And he was still now trying to put up a brave front, trying to console Lord Ram. Then he also sat down dejected. Then Ram tells Lakshman, Lakshman, you go to Ayodhya, I will commit suicide. Assist Bharat. Now Lakshman's confidence goes further down. And he starts crying. See, till now Lord Ram knew subconsciously that Lakshman is there too. Now when Lakshman starts crying, Lord Ram is uncontrollable. And he starts wailing piteously. And then Lakshman realizes that I can't afford to be like, you know, show my emotions. So he gathers himself. Because right now he has to serve the Lord. So what has happened? Denial, bargain. Now Lord Ram explodes in anger. He says, people think I am very kind-hearted and my kind-hearted nature has been seen as a weakness. Today, I will destroy the entire universe. And he takes out his Brahmastra and he puts it on his bow and he's about to release the arrow. So he's about to become a victim of anger. He wants to destroy the whole universe. There is going to be universal dissolution at this point of time. This is when Lakshman does something amazing. There are 9 things. There's a whole few chapters how Lakshman counsels Lord Ram. So I've made some notes from that. There are 9 counseling or mentoring lessons that Ramayana teaches us through Lakshman's counseling Lord Ram. It's amazing. So what has happened? Association. See, first was denial, bargain, anger. Now good association, meaningful association as devotees when we have to preach, when we have to help others. We can remember these 9 principles that Lakshman followed. When you know somebody who is in a lot of pain and suffering, we can follow this. And each of this is amazing. First few verses, you know what Lakshman does when Lord Ram is about to shoot the arrow? Lakshman falls at Lord Ram's feet and grabs it. And he shows utter humility. This is the first thing he does. You know, he shows his position. Basically, he convinces Ram that I am your servant and I want to serve you. He proves, basically, is established in this position of humility that I am servant of Lord Ram and I want to serve my Lord. Then second he does is very good. He starts appreciating Lord Ram. Lord Ram, his arrow is on the bow. He wants to destroy the universe. And Lakshman says, oh Ram, oh my dear brother, you are the most virtuous man in the creation. You are the most strong. You are the most virtuous. And he starts glorifying different qualities of Lord Ram. His patience, his kind-heartedness. Appreciation is good to hear, right? So Lakshman, first he shows humility, then appreciation, then Lord Ram is a little cool. See, when you are emotional, logical reasoning doesn't help immediately. See, Sita was screaming at Lakshman and she was in the space of concern. And Lakshman was in the space of confidence. He had complete confidence in Lord Ram. There was a conflict of concern and confidence. And Lakshman is logically, you know, he's trying to convince her, but then she got emotional. So emotional versus logical, logical loses. So Lakshman has already realized that. So here what he's doing, he's also emotional. He's like touching the feet, he's grabbing, he's crying, showing humility, and now he's appreciating Lord Ram. After that, he gives logic. The third thing is logic. He points out to the same evidence which Ram has seen. The evidence of the chariot broken, the blood, which is basically Ravana killing Jatayu. Jatayu. But then Jatayu is still elsewhere. Right now, the chariot is here. So they are only seeing the chariot and the broken things and some blood and all of that. So Lakshman also sees the same evidence and he logically explains to Lord Ram how you see, you are right in the observation, but your conclusion is wrong. There is only one set of footprints. So there are 2 Rakshas I have not fought for Sita. There is only one person and somebody has tried to help Mother Sita and that person is somewhere near, either dead. So basically Lakshman gives very logical explanations to Ram, but only after having emotionally placated him. after having touched his feet, massaged his feet, and then having appreciated him, and now he gives logic. And then the fourth thing he does is amazing. He approves of Lord Ram's anger. He says, you should be angry. You should destroy the universe. Nobody is helping you. So again, if you see, there is emotion here. He is basically empathizing. And then he says very humbly and gently, but for these two people who are fighting, or few people, one person who is kidnapped, Mother Sita, please don't be angry with the whole world. And but, my dear Lord, if you don't get Mother Sita, please do unleash your anger on the entire universe. So like that, he approves of the Lord's anger. Four, right? And the fifth is, he again starts massaging the Lord's feet. Again, servant mood. There's a lot of verses there. He massages Lord's feet. And then sixth thing he does is he reminds the Lord of the duties he has to perform towards the living entities as a Kshatriya. He reminds the Lord gently of his duties. And after the six things, what Lakshman does is what we do generally, the first thing. Okay, but before I tell you what Lakshman does, the seventh is a thing which we all do in our preaching. But this is to be done after we have done the first six. What is the first he does? He touches the Lord's feet, humility, then appreciation, then logical explanations, then approves of the Lord Ram situation, then massages the Lord's feet, basically servant mood, and then sixth, reminds him of his duties. And the seventh thing Lakshman does is shocking. Nowhere in Ramayana you will find Lakshman behaving like this with Ram. This is strong preaching. Lakshman is preaching so strongly. You know what he tells Lord Ram? So what if you have lost Sita? Why are you crying like an ordinary man? You have a responsibility for all living entities. And what is this suffering? Why are you getting so agitated because of your suffering? Everybody is suffering in this material world. So he starts saying how material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Strong preaching. And then Lakshman starts giving examples of suffering in the material world. He says, you think you are the only one suffering? Don't you know how much Yayati suffered? And then he gives Yayati's story. Don't you know how much Nausha suffered? And Vashishta, he lost his 100 sons. Can your suffering be greater than his suffering? Does Mother Earth not suffer when there is earthquakes? Why there are earthquakes on planet Earth? Because she is suffering. And Suryadev, when there is an eclipse, he is suffering. Chandradev is covered by Rahu. So he starts giving all the different examples of personalities who have suffered. So generally, this is the seventh thing he does. The eighth thing, there are 9 points I got from this, I derived. But after this seven, the eighth one was the one that I liked the most. See, what happens generally when we are strongly preaching, we sometimes get carried away by that passion. And we think, I'm really good, you know. I can instruct. I can tell you what to do. I have a holier than thou attitude, and like, I'm there. I know what is the problem with the world, and I've come here to solve this. And he's like in full spirit, chastising Lord Ram. And then the eighth thing is, Lakshman reveals his own insignificant position. He says, my dear Lord, I'm telling you all this I've learned from you only. He tells, he's very, very conscious of his humble position. He doesn't get carried away. So he has taken charge. Remember, Lakshman is in charge right now. But he doesn't forget his position of being the servant of the Lord. And the ninth is very important. Call for action. He tells Lord Ram that, come on, get up, rise. Let us march and find Sita. Let us follow these footprints. For this expert counseling of Lakshman helps Lord Ram. Then Lord Ram accepts that Sita has been abducted. That acceptance is, now Ram is ready. And what is the proof that he has come to the stage of acceptance? In a series of verses, he tells Lakshman, I trust you. You are my well-wisher. I surrender to you. Please tell me what to do. Please tell me where we should go now. So Lakshman is junior. Lakshman is servant of Ram. But Ram is willing to take guidance, be subordinate to his junior. Can we take guidance? When we are vulnerable, when we are weak, when we are devastated, can we take shelter of other devotees? Can we, are we willing to trust somebody else's intelligence more than ours when we are in pain, when we are disoriented? So like that, we can't pretend to be, we can't lead a life of pretension. And you know, it's interesting, I was reading this, I was saying, Krishna, you know, Lakshmana's, the way he chastises Lord Ram, it is like Krishna chastising Arjuna. You know, what is that? He says, Klebhyam Asmagama Partha, where has his weakness come to you? So I was thinking, wow, Krishna is chastising his servant, your servant is chastising God. And Lord Ram is listening. So that's why he's a perfect human being. He's willing to be vulnerable, he's willing to take guidance, and he surrenders to Lakshman's. Lakshman saves the day. So this is, I want to pause here and maybe we can have some discussion on this if we have a few minutes. So to conclude, we discussed about the four things that happen when we, before we get into the depression. First is denial, bargaining, anger, and if you have good association, then we come to the stage of acceptance. And that acceptance will help us then heal our problems. If you see Gautam Buddha, I would like to conclude with this. He taught acceptance in a very sensitive and very mature way to one lady who came to him. Her son had died, untimely death. And she was desperate to revive her son. So she started wailing and beating her chest. And she was uncontrollable. She told Buddha that, please get my son back. And Buddha felt very interesting. But yes, I can bring him back to life. Very easy. Just get me little rice from a house which has not seen death. So she just hears this, get me some rice. Oh, my son will come back to life. But then he says, he reminds her, get me rice from a house which has not seen death. So she goes to one house, she says, please give me rice. And then when she gets the rice, she says, so in your house there has been no death, no? And that house owner says, yes, no death, but 5 years ago my mother died. Oh, there has been death. Then she goes to the next house. So in every house, somebody has died at some time. So finally, after many houses visit, she realizes that death is inevitable and she begins to accept that her son has died. So Buddha taught acceptance very compassionately. So we need to practice acceptance, but for that we need good association. We need to trust some devotees, at least one devotee. We can't be vulnerable with everyone. That's not the point. And even in this world, I'm sure you must have realized that, you know, we can't have intimate relationship with any human being. We can't have intimate relationship with any person unless that person has access to some information about you which he can potentially use to destroy you. He should not destroy you, but what I'm saying is, I should, if I'm vulnerable means, if I want to have an intimate relationship with someone, then I need to be willing to share something of me by which I can be destroyed. So that's difficult, I know. That's why I said we can't be vulnerable with everyone. But acceptance is it's very healing. So Lord Ram is teaching this through this pastime. Hare Krishna. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Any comments or corrections or questions? Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you so much for a beautiful class, Prajwari Prabhu. I was just wondering about separation and how it seems that separation has two aspects. One is one's intense longing and attraction for Krishna and wanting to be with Krishna or Ram. And the other aspect is one's kind of disgust and detachment from the world and, you know, not wanting to be here and feeling I'm caught here and why am I not there? So I just wondered if you could say something about this, because it seems like both elements are required to really long, like even in Shikshashtakam, like I've fallen in this ocean of birth and death, please pick me up. But then at the same time, it seems that real separation is based on being attracted
yeah.
to Krishna. So like even in the Bhagavatam we read that detachment is necessary, but too much detachment is not good also. So can you just say like what role disgust, detachment, depression, dejection with the world, what role does that play in actually developing real mood of separation?
Beautiful question, Maharaj. I'll share my candid thoughts on this. Actually, renunciation, you know, wanting to be away from this material world, because we suffer, we go through suffering, all of us, because our Kripa Mahaprabhu was telling me a few days ago that we expect to get, you know, jalebi, samosas and gulab jamun, but the world gives us simple porridge. So we go through suffering mainly because of our expectations, and, you know, and then we, and at that time, at least when we turn to Krishna, that is great. But the problem is that wanting to run away from the material world can make us hard-hearted. And we may not really, it may not be positive, as you rightly said. Separation is actually wanting to, you know, when we are attracted to Krishna, that's the ideal. But to begin with, let our suffering get us to Krishna. I think you mentioned it in your, that suffering is, what is that phrase you use in one of the books I read? Suffering is the beginning of inquiry? What is that? I also forgot. But something to the effect that suffering is the beginning of inquiry. So when we go through suffering and we come to Krishna, it's like, you know, I was saying yesterday evening, we are fallen in a well and Krishna has thrown the rope from above. Prabhupada has thrown the rope. Come. And we are like, why should I go up? I'm comfortable in the well. So we need to be stung by the bees and snakes and all that in the well. And we need a kick from below and we also need to be pulled from above. If you're not attracted by the pulling of Krishna, Krishna's attractive features, then we need to go through suffering. At least that, Krishna, I don't want this. Krishna, I want you. That is okay. But long run, yes, we need to be attracted to Krishna. Krishna's beautiful qualities. But this is a beginning step. But we should not stop there. And I personally, this is my understanding, it is better to be attached in the material world and come in front of Krishna and express our pain and suffering that because the attachment is causing. If there is a drop of tear, like Dhruva also went to Krishna with, he wanted a kingdom, right? Greater than his great-grandfather. He was attached, he was desperately wanted. So that attachment, if you have a drop of tear in your eye when you're crying to Krishna, Krishna, I have the attachment, I accept this, please help me. So there, because we are offering our emotions to Krishna, Krishna purifies because Krishna is all attractive. We need to trust Krishna to pull our hearts. Because otherwise, we may artificially give up our responsibilities or things that really help us or keep us happy in material world. See, there are, I'll tell you a classic example. This is a true story. I want to say this story. I was once giving a class. I went to a program. It was a small group, 15-20 people. And the host, he had called me to his family. He said, all our family members will be there. You give Bhagavatam class. So I went and I said, what should I speak? And he told me, Prabhu, speak heavy stuff. I said, what do you mean? He said, you speak strong Bhagavatam. So I said, okay, he's asked for it. So so I opened Prahlad's prayers and, you know, instruction to his, you know, that verses, Katam Priyaya Anukampitaya, where Prahlad is describing how the man and women get attached to each other and how they get entangled by sex life and then how they, all the details, graphic details. There are three verses which speak about how the fall down happens and how a man gets, you know, trapped like a spider gets trapped. All that I spoke in detail, word to word explanation. I was in my own world. I was in my elements. I was happy. So after the class, any questions? So an elderly lady, she was sitting behind in the chair. She raised her hand. And the next 5 minutes what she spoke was so intense. She said, Prabhuji, I think I'm going to suffer eternally in this material world because I'm so attached to material life. And as she was saying it, she had tears in her eyes. And then I said, can you elaborate? What are your attachments? She said, I'm so attached to my grandchildren. I can't live a day without them. And then she started crying. But it's all material, Prabhuji. There is no Krishna. I said, what do you mean? How many grandchildren do you have? She had 11 grandchildren because she had, I think, 4 daughters, you know, 2 sons like that. So she's talking about all her grand. I said, tell us more. Then she said, she started telling the names of all her grandchildren. And then I said, okay, you're attached to them. And she says, every day I have to spend, I spend at least 3-4 hours with my grandchildren on Zoom call, or if she's at one of the children's houses, she's playing with the children. And the age group is from 17 to 3 or something. And she started, as she was explaining it, I could see she was in her element. You know, she was like, she was blissful talking about her grandchildren. And at the same time, because of hearing that strong Bhagavatam, she's now feeling that inadequacy. She's feeling she's fallen. And like she's going on and on. And I could see the paradox. I could see both emotions coming out. And I'm looking at her intensely, and she's like going on. And Prabhuji, but I'm so far away from Krishna. She's crying. And then I said, okay, you said about Maithili. What about her? She's how many years old? And then she's telling, oh, Maithili, you know, I love to tell her Krishna stories and this and that. So she's talking about all her grandchildren. And after at a certain point of time, she was like done. I said, Mataji, you said you play with your grandchildren. You're so happy with your grandchildren and you're attached to them. What do you do with them? Do you discuss, what do you talk with them? She said, I talk everything. I talk to them about Ramayana, about Mahabharata, about what they love. I give them nice prasad and all that she was saying. And after she finished, Krishna inspired me to tell this to her. I told her, Mataji, you know, you have to do two things in life. What you are telling just now, that you're fallen, you're so far away from Krishna, you're so attached. Just continue this. Continue speaking like this. Continue feeling like this. But don't stop doing what you're doing for your grandchildren. Don't stop even one bit. Just do that. But that is why we need Bhagavatam. We need scriptures, because scriptures, they, you know, get us on the right track. But that doesn't mean we'll give up everything abruptly. That's the danger. That's where so then I was telling Mataji, your attachment to your grandchildren is very healthy, because when your grandchildren, these 11 of them, when they are my age, 50, they will remember you with deep gratitude. Because I grew up with my grandparents, first 10 years of my life. So I know what it is to get love of grandparents. Grandparents love you more than your parents. Right? And I still remember, as a 3-4-year-old boy, one day holding my grandfather and sleeping, the next morning, next day sleeping with my grandmother. So I somewhere feel that because of that intense affection and love, I have not gone crazy now. I'm mentally sane, because my grandparents gave me a lot of hugs, kisses, love. Okay. So that is needed. So I told this Mataji that don't stop any bit of what you're doing, but continue to feel this, you're away from Krishna. You're suffering and, you know, you're attached. So somewhere Krishna will organically and seamlessly bring you to that stage where you'll give up this world with, you know, like one of the Matajis in our congregation, when she left her body, it was a classic departure, you know. She has 5-6 grandchildren. She is a counselor. Her children are devotees. And when she's dying, like Guru Maharaj came to her few days ago, and before that we met her, and then she's talking, and then suddenly at one point of time she realized she's leaving. She's telling her son, oh, get my bead bag. She's gasping for breath. She has a bead bag and she's looking at all her sons, grandchildren, everybody is there. Be happy, okay, all of you, be happy. I think I have to go now. Krishna. And then she left. It's like big sannyasis and, you know, gurus and, you know, big leaders and kings and emperors may not get this kind of departure. She is like fully Krishna conscious. And if you see her life, life was so-called attached life in the sense. But she gave Krishna in her own situation. She was attached to Krishna. And we have to encourage, I think as a community, we should encourage our devotees to develop this kind of natural renunciation. This is organic. What we did, you know, unfortunately for me, Keshav Maharaj was interested in Bhagavad Gita. He was reading Bhagavad Gita when he was 15. I came at a very, you know, when I was 25. For many of us, renunciation was like a knee-jerk reaction. You know, just, but in reality, renunciation is very seamless. It's like sunrise and sunset. You see sunset in nature. How does it happen? There is rhythm, there is beauty, there is harmony in nature. Right? That's how renunciation happens. But for us, what has happened, because of strong preaching and all that, it's like switch on, switch off button. If it is If it is pitch dark, if it is pitch dark and you want light, what do? Light comes. But in nature, light doesn't come like that. How do you become old? Is it that one morning you get up and suddenly you become old? Slowly you start, right? Slowly you start realizing you're getting old. In India, as children, we used to call all elderly people as uncle. Uncle, uncle. So as you know, when playing cricket, if the ball went to some elderly person, I would say, uncle, ball, please give the ball. So a few years ago, I was walking for some program and some children were playing cricket and the ball came to me. I picked up the ball and I suddenly heard children say, uncle, uncle, please give the ball. I said, what happened? Did I become an uncle? When did I become an uncle? When did this happen? When was that? That is, seamlessly it happened. You know, slowly it happened. That's how renunciation happens. So I was telling this Mataji that you will be renounced from this material world. You will just keep hankering for Krishna. Just be where you are. And just keep reading Bhagavatam. Read the strong sections of Bhagavatam. But don't change your situation. Krishna will pull you out of it. I don't know, Maharaj, I went off on and here and there. I don't know, should we stop here or take one? I'll take one more question. Krishna Sakha? Okay, oh, Mataji, yes, please. Thank you. Somebody will have to tell me when to stop. We'll take a call on that. The last question we'll take, yeah. Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for this class. It was so nectarian. I really enjoyed it. Just like on this point, detachment without attachment to Krishna is dangerous.
Detachment without attachment to Krishna is dangerous, yeah.
Because in the same, I was just reading in Bhagavad Gita that detachment from material life is the same as attachment to Krishna. Something along those lines. But yeah, detachment without attachment to Krishna leads to hard-heartedness and then impersonalism in our interactions, yeah. And then awkwardness. So it's better to be, you're saying it's better to be attached and then speak about it.
To Krishna.
And
I didn't say, it's not good to be attached, but attached and come to Krishna rather than be detached and be away from Krishna.
Mm. And then offer him our feelings.
Offer him whatever we are suffering, take it, offer it to Krishna for healing.
Yeah, and then Krishna will purify our attachments. So my question is, how can we stay soft-hearted in our attachments?
That's a good question.
Avoid overprotecting our hearts, especially, you know, when we hear about Srila Prabhupada describing household life as a dark well. How can we give up overprotecting?
Yeah.
Because I think I struggle with keeping my heart soft when dealing with attachments.
Actually, day before yesterday, Leela Shakti Mataji kind of answered this when she said, answer to that question. She was saying about how we need to hear Prabhupada's classes every day. So the magic of hearing is, especially Bhagavatam study, is that Bhagavatam, if you see, has two things. Bhagavatam is not only talking about household life being a dark well. Bhagavatam describes Krishna's beauty in such poetic detail. Krishna's smile. There's so much of beauty and there's so much of love is also revealed in Bhagavatam. So we need to balance. See, Prabhupada has given us a perfect package of Krishna consciousness. There are many organizations. In India is a land of two things. Spirituality in India is generally two things. Sahajya or Mayavad. Mayavad is renounce, renounce, renounce. Material world is a dark well of suffering. Renounce, that is Mayavad. Sahajya is, oh, Krishna is so nice. I love Krishna. I am a gopi. You know, that is Sahajya. So India is a Sahajya loka and Mayavad loka. Very, very prevalent, these two extremes. Look at Prabhupada's genius and Bhagavatam. Actually, that is Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam gives us everything about Krishna. Details of Krishna's smile, Krishna's laughter, the signs on Krishna's lotus feet. Everything is there. How Krishna is twirling a lotus flower. Shamam hiranyaparidim vanamalya barha datu pravala natavesha manu vratamse. Vinyasta hasta itare nadunanam abjam karunot palalaka kapola mukhabjahasam. Krishna, how he's twirling the lotus flower, how he's with his eyes, you know, he's looking at the gopis, he's also composing poetry. And all that gracefulness of Krishna is described in such amazing detail that your heart will be completely satisfied. And just when you think, wow, I love Krishna. And then just the danger is you may become a sahijiya. And that just then you will see Sukadeva Goswami say, so you pig, rascal, dog. You are attached. Oh, shwavid, vara, ushtra, kare. Oh, okay. So you are smashed. You are brought down. And then when you hear all that, you are fallen, you are a dog, you are useless, you are sense gratified in a dark way, you feel depressed. Then you hear about Krishna's beauty. How Krishna is so loving. Krishna is great. Krishna is sweet. Oh, you feel loved by Krishna. See, our Bhagavatam is the best. Bhagavatam comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comforted. So if you are very comfortable, Bhagavatam will smash you. And if you are already smashed, sad, then Bhagavatam will reveal. Is that okay? Actually, I just want to end with this. See, how Sukadeva Goswami got attracted to Krishna? He was impersonalist initially. But there are two verses. Vyasadeva sent his disciples and he said, okay, you chant these two verses. And when Sukadeva Goswami heard these two verses, he was completely attached. And what is the first verse of Krishna's beauty? When he's coming back to Barha Pidam verse, right? Barha Pidam Natavara Vapu Karnayo Karnikal. All the details of how Krishna is dressed, how Krishna is walking, how he's entering Vrindavan from the forest. So Sukadeva Goswami hears this. He says, wow, Krishna is so beautiful. Krishna is so attractive. He's completely, his all impersonal conception goes away. And he gets attached to Krishna. But the game changer, the real deal was the next verse. Where the first was Krishna's beauty. So he's completely attached to Krishna. But the next verse was what? Anybody knows? Aho bakiyam stanakala kutam. This is the verse where, what is the last line? Kamva dayalum sharanam rajema. How Krishna delivered Putana who had come to kill him. So Krishna sucked the poison from her breast and sucked her life force and gave her the position of a nurse. So when Sukadeva Goswami heard this, he said, oh, Krishna is not just attractive, he is also compassionate. This compassion is what, compassion of Krishna is what made Sukadeva Goswami completely attached to Krishna. See, we also, we may be attracted by somebody who is very beautiful, very attractive in this world, right? But that attraction and beauty is useless when we are suffering. imagine you are in the kitchen, mass cooking, festival cooking, and you are cooking and you get some dal falls on your hand and you're burning. And you're screaming. And then some beautiful person comes and smiles at you, Hare Krishna. And you are like, okay, but I'm... Right? So we are all like that. We are in the kitchen of this material world where there is fire all around us. We are burning. Some of us have got scars which will haunt us for the rest of our life. So we are burning. So Krishna is out. Krishna is like somebody who comes to the kitchen. He is very beautiful also, but we are not attracted by his beauty initially. When he comes to us, he has this Bernal in his hand. He has this medicine in his hand. So we see that, yes. And then as you're getting healed, Krishna is beautiful also. Krishna, you are so beautiful. Krishna, you are so nice. But that comes from a space of somebody healing me. So I think that's the beauty of Krishna. He is beautiful, all attractive, but he's also very compassionate. That's why Sukadeva Goswami got attracted. He sees Krishna is all attractive, but he's very compassionate. So when we are going through suffering because of our attachments, we can turn to Krishna and see Krishna's compassionate side. And that compassionate side of Krishna will fill our heart with emotional remembrance of Krishna. Unfortunately, most of us in this bhakti practice have intellectual remembrance of Krishna. We have fallen in love with Krishna's biodata. Krishna was born in Mathura. He went to Vrindavan and then he came back at the age of 9. Then he went with killed Jarasandha. Jarasandha attacked 17 times. So Krishna's biodata is quite long. And we have fallen in love with that biodata. And we can rattle off all the things. Krishna has 4 kinds of flutes. And each flute has how many holes. This is very important. Please trust me. Hearing and reading about Krishna is very important. Because it purifies the heart. But emotional remembrance of Krishna comes when we have some attachments. And that is what will help us remember Krishna at the time of death. That is what will help us tell Krishna, Krishna, I'm willing to go through the suffering again and again. Because what Krishna gives us when we remember him is unmatchable. See, in World War, they did some survey after the World War, Second World War. What is the thing that people remember the most when they were dying? What did they remember the most, or what did they say out, scream out loud when they were dying? And 90% of the people, soldiers who died, even civilians who died in the World War, their last thing they said was, they called out to their mother. Mummy, ma, ma, you know, like that. Now, did they have to intellectually remember the mother? It was spontaneous, right? You don't need training to remember your mother, because there is emotions involved. So our goal in bhakti is to remember Krishna the way we remember our mother. So in one memorial service in our community, one Mataji who had passed away, every devotee was speaking their realizations, glorification. So finally the son began to speak. The son said, first he started giving biodata. My mother was born in this village and she got married at the age of 14. And then she came to Mumbai with my father. And her favorite, this was, you know, she started telling initially about all the favorite things of her, his mother, and offering was going on. And at some point of time, he entered the phase of how his mother sacrificed so much for them. How his mother did this and how she went without food for many days for that. You know, all that. So then we could see that from biodata, he was entering the space of emotions. How his mother helped him. And then his eyes became moist and then he broke down. You see what happened? From intellectual remembrance, it was emotional remembrance. So when we go through suffering, if we can emotionally connect with Krishna, then that is worth it. We stop here, Maharaj? Yeah? Thank you so much. Please forgive me if I spoke anything beyond my level of realization, but I'm very grateful to all of you at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. As I said last evening, I just want to end with this. I've been coming here for 20 years and the community here has shaped me, has helped me. Two things I've got immensely from all the devotees here. One is a lot of encouragement and love, and also timely guidance and feedback. And I'm eternally grateful to all of you for this, and thank you for accepting me as a part of your community. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.